And I announced previously that our Chief Justice Seda is handling a family emergency in Las Vegas. However, she's listening to the arguments on podcast, and also will participate in the post-argument conference that we have. Thank you. We're ready for Mr. Lowe.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please support
counsel Robert J. Lowe, Deputy District Attorney, Elko County, for the appellant, State of Nevada. In this case, there's two issues going on. What's going on are the question of whether the district court, the trial court, was an error in basically judicial estoppel by preventing the government from getting to trial on two theories. Number one, personal liability that Ms. Fields actually killed. And the second would be that she acted as a principal aider and abettor. And the district court picked and chose, if you will, and said, well, that since there were two cases and they were looking at the record on both cases, and said, well, basically, since the state made some remarks in the other trial, the co-defendant, Vern, they call him Vern Fields, the bottom line is the district court said, well, you're stuck with this aiding and abetting theory, and we're going to strike count one, the personal liability. And so that is a kind of interesting issue because the U.S. Supreme Court's dodged that bullet for a long time, and there's some cases on it, but they go different ways. But perhaps the best case is, beg your pardon, is this Fry case, U.S. v. Fry, 489 F3rd 201. Where the issue is inconsistent arguments, and the Eighth Circuit says, well, it's not. Fifth Circuit says it's not so much a problem, especially where the evidence is not so clear as to which defendant did the killing and which did the aiding and abetting. In this kind of case, it's proper for the government to make inconsistent arguments, and. Frankly, none of us was there except for the two defendants, and so we don't really know. So we're stuck arguing the two. And it's proper to point out, I think at this point, of course, that their liability would have been the same. So in this kind of case, it's proper for the government to argue to the jury, and due process not offended. Due process requires at the trial level, it's not the shock of the conscience that we see in the pretrial investigation level, like where the government gets a warrant for the, you know, a human organ or something like that, and everything else is fulfilled, but it shocks the conscience. It's fundamental fairness, of course, and is it fundamentally fair for the government to argue alternative theories in two different cases, successive trials of co-defendants? And so we don't see a problem with that because we have the at trial all the presumption of innocence, the burden of proof, all the trial protections inure to the benefit of the defendant as they should, so that the guilt will be punished and the innocent will not be punished. So the jury will figure it out, and secondly, the alternative theories give the jury the alternative to say, well, you didn't necessarily kill, but you aided and abetted, so you're guilty, and there you are.
Well, counsel, can there be inconsistent theories? And I'd like your opponent to address this also. Can there be inconsistent theories in what supports the aiding and abetting claim? Mr. Burns' case, as I recall, or excuse me, Mr. Fields' case, as I recall, was presented largely on the argument that there was a financial motive surrounding the intent to kill, whereas in this case, Mrs. Fields' motive supposedly relates to some improper contact or conduct. Those are inconsistent theories that support the aiding and abetting argument, aren't they?
That's a great question, Judge. Thanks for bringing that up. You know, of course, motive is not an element So it's just something that if the government has, the government would produce perhaps to shine light on why the crime was committed. So it's not really an element of the crime. Beyond that, the government, I think, in, you'd have to check, but I, you know what, I think in, at least in Mr. Fields' trial, and perhaps, I believe in Mrs. Fields' trial, said, you know, here is the statement of Ms. Walker, who said that, you know, she said that Mrs. Fields told her that she killed the victim. All right, great evidence. And the bottom line is, what about this statement? Well, she said, I did it because he was molesting my grandson. Well, we don't necessarily believe that, the part about the rationale. It sounds a lot better if you say that. I mean, nobody cares for child molesters very much. It's easier to say, I killed him because he was molesting my grandson, rather than I killed him for the $300,000 insurance policy that we took out on his life and the rest of the chips that we can't.
So the state's not advancing her assertion or reason as expressed in this statement as a basis for the or a theory for aiding and abetting the murder.
We accept the fact that she made the statement to Ms. Walker, and that should come in. And that's another point I wanted to bring up, but we don't necessarily accept the rationale that she gave that, well, it's because he was molesting my grandson. We think it was purely a financial deal.
You're saying that's
jurisdiction to entertain the issue of the admissibility of the Nikwa Walker statement?
We do, under Shade. Shade says it's, of course, at 111 Nevada 887. In considering an appeal, the court has the jurisdiction to review all intermediate orders of the district court. As we stated in Shade 2, this court may nonetheless consider the issue of the exclusion of evidence in the context of the appeal from the order granting Shade's motion to dismiss. The court, therefore, has jurisdiction to consider whether the district court erred by excluding the evidence related to the heroin transaction. So we do believe the court has jurisdiction. There's also, you know, the statute. It's 177.045. So we do believe that the court should allow this evidence in. The district court, we think, was just an error. When it was overturned, it reviewed this court's order and thought, well, I have to do something about these inconsistent theories. And the state, frankly, is confused by that. It's befuddling why the court would say that. Then the court, on its own, sua sponte, says, and is nothing from this court's order that we can see, says, by the way, Ms. Walker's testimony is out because it's connected to the Moberg conspiracy, but in actuality, it could stand on its own. You could.
How would the Walker comment be connected to the Moberg conspiracy anyway? I didn't quite follow that. You know,
I don't get it either. I think you could present the Walker testimony without the Moberg conspiracy. Is this court the Moberg conspiracy? The Northern panel said, you know what, that's other bad act evidence, shouldn't have been admitted. You could bring in the Walker testimony without the Moberg conspiracy very easily, and it's not necessary to get into the Moberg stuff if you don't need it. So,
So is your point that the state has never definitively proved who dealt the killing blow,
right,
nor is it required to?
Right. We don't know who did it, and so what we do is we charge an alternative. We charge in your personal capacity and also perhaps as an aider and abettor, and then we let the jury sort it out. And the jury's told in the instructions, hey, you don't have to be unanimous as to which one it was. You just have to come back with a conviction for first-degree murder, and that's it. That's the way it is under our law. So they're both equally culpable and under our law. And so there's no harm, no foul, really, as there might have been in other cases from other jurisdictions. So this case involves interesting issues of separation of powers, too. Because here's the district court telling in a pretrial ruling, before you get to trial, in the criminal context of like telling the government beforehand what they can't do. Normally, the cases are after the fact. I don't think of any case I can think of I've read that says that dealt with something beforehand. Before the case goes to trial and telling the government what evidence it can use and what theory it must pursue, and God help us if the district courts are wrong and they're overturned by the reviewing court, and then where are we? So it just opens a huge can of worms. The cases that exist in this matter really deal with manipulation of evidence, where one confession is used in one trial and then the second confession is used in a separate second trial, or where the theories are so inconsistent, and that didn't happen here. It's so inconsistent if you use the same evidence and argument that you used in the first trial and the second trial, it's virtually impossible to get a conviction. That didn't happen here. Virtually identical evidence and identical argument. Could I reserve 3 minutes?
Yes.
I don't know if I did that. And all right. Thank you, Judge. And where the core facts necessary to convict the defendant are expressly rejected in the second trial and to convict defendant B, and that certainly wasn't done. I think I've touched on my main points, and that's about 3 minutes, unless there's a quick question.
Any questions?
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson for Linda Fields.
May it please the court. I think we agree on one thing, that is the state and Ms. Fields, and that is the rule that prevents the utilization by prosecutors of inconsistent theories when they violate the due process rights of the defendant and others. I think what we don't agree in is what the record says in this case and what the record said in the trial of John Vernon Fields. It is only the most fanciful characterization of the record that could suggest for a moment that in the John Vernon Fields case, there was not the explicit argument made that Mr. Fields was the person who wielded whatever instrument was used to strike the blows that killed Jeremiah Polinsky. I could recite record testimony to that effect, but I doubt there's any confusion on the panel's part. Over and over, the state's witnesses in that case said, no person who wasn't big and powerful, surely not a woman who was 5'4 and afflicted with multiple sclerosis, could have generated the force that caused the skull fractures that occurred on Mr. Polinsky. In fact, in the John Vernon Fields case, with respect to the Nequel Walker testimony, the prosecutor said, Nequel Walker said Linda told her, I hit him over a head with a pipe because he was molesting the grandchild. Believe it or not, I am going to assert to you, you can disregard the whole thing. There's no close call here as to whether this is inconsistent. This is utterly inconsistent. The only question is, under the rules now, whether it is material and consequent and results in a...
Was that argument in closing argument?
It was in our closing argument, but also I think if you read from the testimony extracted from their expert witness, Dr. Leese, essentially also focuses exclusively on Mr. Vernfields as the perpetrator.
I thought his testimony was a little broader than that, counsel.
Well, I would say, in looking at, he says, pardon me for just a second, I'll find the site, Your Honor. I believe something to the effect of, I apologize for not having my fingers on it. That person is quite angry, that person is using a lot of force. It's going to have to be solid. It's going to have to be something that won't shatter on the first blow. There's going to have to be a series of blows there. And from there, the prosecutor argued his theory. For the prosecutor now to be permitted in this case to say, particularly in light of the fact that they still have an aiding and abetting claim that works the same result if they obtain a conviction, and I will add parenthetically the reason they don't want to proceed primarily on the aiding and abetting claim is because, as this panel knows, the evidence in this case is simply that somebody was killed. My read of the record, and I think it's a fair one, is we really don't know where that occurred, but for the Nico Walker testimony, we don't know who wielded the weapon, other than the expert testimony offered by Dr. Leese and the arguments of the prosecutor that it was Vern Fields. For them now to turn around and say, no, in fact, in this case, we're going to now argue that Linda Fields wielded the weapon based on Nico Walker's testimony, which I will get to in a moment, does constitute the kind of manipulation of the evidence that is not contemplated by the due process clause.
But once you have that,
go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, Justice Berger.
In the closing argument, didn't the state, in fact, go on to say the law in Nevada is that it doesn't matter whether you believe he struck the lethalist John Fields trial, struck the lethal blows himself, or whether he aided and abetted the murder, we charge them in the alternative with either striking the lethal blows himself or aiding and abetting Linda.
He did say that, Your Honor. Okay. Does that sanitize what his effort was to the jury? We're not going to be able to ever pierce that veil and know what the jury's deliberations were. That's why this kind of, and I would cite you to the Drake versus Kemp case, where essentially in that case a similar technique was used. It wasn't a confession case so much as it was a situation where they argued a weak person with emphysema couldn't have been the actual perpetrator in one case and turned around in a second case and argued exactly the opposite. And that's precisely what's happening here. I don't think just because you have a pig and you put baby clothes on it, it manufactures the pig into a baby. And that's what that kind of sanitizing statement in a closing argument is an attempt to do.
Would you have proper impeachment, though, from testimony at the John Fields trial to show that the state is inconsistent on their theories? Saying
it would certainly help, Your Honor. I would consider
That's why I'm worried that, because you used the word due process, and if there was a violation of due process, is there really a violation if, in fact, you can use impeachment testimony to say to this that the state is inconsistent? You know, first they say they do, then they don't. You know, that old song. And wouldn't that be beneficial to somebody like Linda Fields in this case, considering her stature and her medical problem?
I think that will absolutely assist her. Do I think it cures the problem? No. And here's why, because really the Nico Walker testimony is inextricably now interlinked with what is attempted. Remember, in John's case, in Vern's case, same person, the prosecutor says disregard Nico Walker's testimony. Now, in Linda Fields' case, and I'm pretty familiar with it because I tried it, the prosecutor says, do we believe Linda Fields? No, we don't believe it, not for a minute. We're not even offering it, essentially, and that the record is clear on that. We're not offering it for its truth. We're offering it as part of its child molestation Mobert conspiracy theory, in answer to your earlier question, Your Honor. Look, this is similar to the contaminated, tainted, and now excluded Mobert evidence. It shows a pattern on the part of Ms. Fields, supposedly. This court rightly, I think, excluded, or a panel of this court excluded that Mobert testimony. How now does Nico Walker's testimony suddenly become no longer being offered for the Moberg conspiracy, but instead being offered for something that is utterly inconsistent with what's been argued in the John Vernon Fields case. It is.
But there are two pieces to the Nequa Walker testimony. There's the first piece, which is she says, supposedly Linda says, I killed Polensky by hitting him over the head with a pipe. And then the second piece is, I did it because I caught him molesting my grandson. So addressing the first part, is it your point that that is valueless as evidence?
Well, let me see if I'm following you correctly, Your Honor. I think I am. It certainly would be more beneficial if I'm forced to try this case with the Nequa Walker testimony, which has been repudiated in both trials by the prosecutor.
As to the molestation of the grandkid?
I think, you know, let me read from the record on that. I don't have it from me, but I would represent to you, I remember very well Mr. Woodbury's comments. Do we believe Nequa Walker? And he didn't add a parenthetical with respect to child molestation. Do we believe Nequa Walker? No, we don't. We would never suggest to you that that's the truth. Suddenly now they're arguing that it is the truth. I don't know how you parse the two, but if the court is suggesting that as a fallback position that the child molestation part stays out and she gets hit and the head part gets in, that's worse for my client.
Counsel, if your client, in fact, made this statement, are we just to throw it out? Totally? We have an admission by a party? What do we do with that?
That's an interesting question, Your Honor. You know, the rules on hearsay are obviously designed. I didn't teach evidence when I taught law school, but I took the class, and I would defer to your expertise in this area, to allow admissions by party opponents in. But there is certainly a limit to the rule, and that limit is when the prejudice, the danger of unfair prejudice, far outweighs whatever probative value it has. In this case, I'm suggesting when you couple it to the tainted Moberg reference, which we're now going to try to exclude, and as I said, that almost hurts.
We don't seem to have to go to that at all. We have this statement by her, exclusive of that as to this grandchild. We take that whole money area and leave it alone. So why shouldn't this come in?
Because it's inconsistent with the position that the prosecution took in John Vernon Fields' case. It's exactly the opposite. John Vernon Fields isn't sitting in Ely, Nevada because somebody thought that John Vernon Fields didn't swing the club. Not based on the argument of the prosecution, not based on the testimony of Dr. Lease at that trial. And now for them to utilize something that they originally proffered for part of a Moberg conspiracy that has been excluded as improper, prior, uncharged prior backs acts, and manipulate it, which is what the due process rules forbid, manipulate it into something that now isn't offered for some other purpose, but is now being offered for the truth of the matter asserted, I find problematic.
You know, counsel, the only thing where I'm having a problem is I understand your inconsistency argument. What I don't understand is the nexus between this alleged statement that Linda Fields made to Nequa Walker and the Moberg conspiracy. The Moberg conspiracy was a different financial motive thing, and I believe the court reversed it because a significant amount of time was spent at the Linda Fields trial on the Moberg conspiracy, and that was one of the factors the court looked at. But the statement, as I think Justice Douglas and Peregrine pointed out, seems to be somewhat independent admission here of participating in killing the victim here.
I understand Your Honor's point. On that, I would suggest to you that in talking about, and I can find this very quickly, I'm sure, Your Honor, that there is a nexus between the child molestation and the Moberg conspiracy, and that is in the Moberg conspiracy, Mr. Moberg was allegedly accused of child molestation, and the prosecutor, in arguing to utilize the Linda Fields, alleged purported statement to Nequa Walker, said, in fact, the following. Now, whether or not Ms. Fields was being totally truthful about catching Mr. Polensky doing such a thing is an entirely separate question. And if you go back to the Mobert tape, you will hear her telling Billy Wells, Roy Mobert is a child molester. Who did Roy Mobert molest? My granddaughter. That's a good reason to kill him. And she knew that because she said it twice, she said it under both extremely similar type circumstances, child molester. There is a tremendous nexus, I think, between those two points.
Thank you. Answer my question.
Let me just conclude by suggesting that for the court to countenance, I believe, the utilization of this kind of inconsistent theory isn't simply cutting the prosecution some slack and allowing the prosecution to throw up to the jury alternative theories. These are diametrically opposed theories. And the requisite manipulation of evidence is involved through the Nequa Walker testimony. And it does create a manifest problem for Ms. Fields in that if the prosecution wants to proceed on the aiding and abetting theory, so be it. The trial court judge, I think, correctly ruled that they could. The problem they have is all that they've got is evidence that somebody got hit back in the head and put or ended up in a river in Salt Lake City, Utah. Beyond that, they don't have much. And they don't want to go to the aiding and abetting, Your Honors, because at best they can prove that there was a homicide and then hope that another person gets convicted for being the principal actor in that homicide when they've already obtained one conviction. And I think that's not permitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Lowell, rebuttal? A little over 3 minutes.
If I could address the last issue first, diametrically opposed theories. It's not true. From my reading of the cases, in the cases, it seems like the prosecutor, Mr. Jordan suggested to the jury that Vern could have swung the board or whatever it was that struck the victim because of his larger size and the force that was required. It's just an inference, but he also made statements that it could have been Ms. Fields, and so it's not clear. It's just there's no real evidence either way. Who did the killing? That's the bottom line, I'm afraid. And so nobody really said it was him, it was her in these trials. But
is the jury verdict against John Fields for first-degree murder doesn't make that determination either. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that judgment of conviction doesn't say one way or the other?
No, Your Honor. Then counsel says, well, this nexus between...
But in order to support the count two of this complaint here, it is necessary for you to tender the Nequa Walker testimony and subscribe to it.
The original count one was that she did it in her own capacity, and count two is that she acted as a principal.
Yeah.
And so
count two is what got struck by the judge, as I understood it.
Count one would.
Or count one
was struck, is my understanding. And so Judge Mayo said you can only go to trial as an aider and abettor. And so
Right. Then
he threw out.
But in order to go to trial on the count that was struck, the state has to tender the Nequa Walker testimony.
Absolutely.
And endorse it.
Absolutely. Endorse it.
Testimony which argued in the Vernon Fields trial was not credible.
Well, I think counsel has it a little bit wrong. Mr. Jordan argued that we dispute the motive. We agree with the statement was made, but we dispute. He's taking it out of context when he takes Mr. Jordan's statement. We don't believe that, or whatever he said, out of context. What Mr. Jordan was referring to, and he goes on and asks the court to please review that page. He says, we dispute the motivation. It sounds better when you're saying to somebody, I killed him because he was molesting my grandson, and I killed him for the insurance dough. So that's what Mr. Jordan was getting at, and counsel's taking that, I'm afraid, out of context. So, and counsel says, well, there's a nexus between the Nicole Walker and testimony and the Moberg. Yeah, but that can be done pretrial with a good pretrial ruling, and Nicole Walker brought into court telling her, let's have nothing about the Moberg conspiracy, just tell us what you know about what she said, and that's it.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Lowe, does the state, Elko County District Attorney's Office, believe they have enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to support the guilt of Linda Fields on count one on the molestation theory? I mean, is that what, how you intend, if you win this appeal, is that how you intend to pursue the trial, that you got enough evidence to independently prove that count one?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure we really accept the molestation theory still.
Well, I think Justice Hardesty's point, if you don't accept it, why are you charging it then like that? Because you're going to have to put on evidence beyond a reasonable doubt in your mind as prosecutors there to establish it. So
right.
Well, I'm kind of confused on that myself, so maybe you could answer that.
I appreciate the question. We don't necessarily accept, I think Justice Pickering pointed out, it's 2 points. Number one, I hit him on the head with a pipe. Number two, because he was molesting my grandson. We don't necessarily accept the point two. We accept point one. And so her motivation that for hitting him in the head with the pipe, we find doubtful. But we believe that she made the statement, and it shows that she killed him, and she knew, or at least knew how he died or was there. So it's very useful. And her statements are, and counsel says, well, it's got to go under 48045, weighing. It's not true. For a statement of the party opponent, you don't do that. It's simply, hey, it's a statement. Statements, these admissions are extremely useful. Certainly, pointing out the obvious now. But
Did the conversation with Nicole Walker pre or post date the determination that Polensky had died from head wounds?
I believe that it was predated. I don't think that, Nicole Walker said she just moved on to the ranch and she hears about it from the defendant that she killed a ranch hand. So I have to confess I'm a little hazy on the timelines right now, but that was my impression, was that she just moved on to the ranch. The defendant takes her aside and says, I killed a ranch hand who I caught molesting my grandson out at the shed or garage or something like that.
So. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Court, thanks, Mr. Lowe and Mr. Johnson, for their arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted, and this court will be in recess until the call of the court.
All rise.